When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donnelly view system, Diolis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello and welcome to the Managing Madrid podcast on a Sunday. I'm your host, Keon Sobani, joined by the great Matt Wiltsia. We are recording this shortly after Real Madrid beat Cadiz 3-0. Here's the list: Thibaut Courtois, Eder Militao, Vinicius Jr., Aurelien Tchouameni, Eduardo Camavinga, Kepa Arrizabalaga. Luckily, Brahim Diaz, by the way, gastroenteritis, last minute drop out of the squad, just like we expected. Another name peeling off unexpectedly day to day. And that wasn't ideal because Rodrigo, not feeling 100%, although the performance would say otherwise, he came into the starting lineup. Dani Ceballos came back today off the bench. Jude Bellingham looked awesome yet again. So thank God for a little bit of a break in the schedule. Thank God for the return of Bellingham. Thank God for the return of Ceballos. Thank God that Rodrigo is looking great right now. And 3 points, a W, Real Madrid win. Let's break it down. Matt, welcome, man. How you doing?
Hey, Keon, doing well. Yeah, it's nice to keep the momentum going. Usually after the international break, we kind of slow starters. We drop points, particularly if Barcelona drops points. But once we took advantage of it, we kept the good momentum going. Rodrigo has finally found the goals, and it's a nice feeling to see him playing so well. And even with all the injuries, there were some I found some interesting tactical adjustments that Carlo made throughout the match. And so I think all in all, this was obviously a good performance and a team we should definitely be beating. But it's never that simple. So I'm glad we got the 3-0 victory.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're making a checklist of the possibilities of a trap game, right off the bat, you had the international break, coming back from it, and also Barca drop points. When Barca drop points, it's not usually a good omen for us because it means we drop points too, but really solid performance. And I'm interested to hear your tactical wrinkles that you noted and you picked up on, because I thought Ancelotti got this right. I mean, half the team is injured. It's not easy kind of throwing out a team that gives you the defense that you lose without Tchouameni and Camavinga, and also gives you the offense that you lose without Vinicius Jr., and not having a striker other than Joselu in the squad. So what did you pick up on? I'm curious, because you had Fede, Modric, and Kroos in midfield, Jude at the top of the diamond, and then Rodrigo, Joselu up top. Did you see it as a kind of normal diamond, or was it a little bit different than usual?
It was a little bit different, and I think the team picked itself given the injuries. But the way Ancelotti set up the personnel is a little bit different than we've seen. I think we started the year with kind of the prototypical diamond. We've seen that shift to more of a 4-4-2 with the right midfielder and the left midfielder being kind of interior advanced number eights when we have the ball. Defensively, just a flat 4-4-2. But then tonight, I think for the most part, we saw a 4-2-3-1. And Kroos and Fede were the double pivot. Bellingham was the clear number 10. And then Rodrigo was a clear left winger, which I thought was a surprising new input into this system. And then the right wing role kind of it's floating rotating role where sometimes it's Fede, sometimes it's Modric, sometimes it's Carvajal. It's kind of asymmetrical and not necessarily a balanced 4-2-3-1 at all times, but I found it interesting that Ancelotti opted for that. And honestly, I think it was the right move on the night, and it definitely got the best out of Rodrigo. I thought it got the best out of Bellingham. And I think I want to give kudos to Fede Valverde because no matter where we put him this season, he does a phenomenal job. And even in a double pivot, he was spectacular. I think he covered for Cruz really well. He covered for Modric, for Carvajal. He even played like that hybrid right wing role at times, and he was just kind of everywhere. I thought Cruz had some moments where you're like, oh, this is why we don't like Cruz in the double pivot, because he doesn't track his runner and Cadiz get free headers in the box. But other than that, I liked this adjustment from Carlo, and I've really liked the tactical, just overall on the season. I've really liked what Carlo has done tactically for the most part.
Yeah, I liked it too. I agree with you 100% on Fede Valverde. I thought he was awesome, and he had a quieter game. Like, the heading is Bellingham. It goes Rodrigo and Bellingham, and I think the subheading is Fede. Maybe even Carvajal, but Fede in particular, I thought did some great work. Because he, usually you're kind of used to Fede Valverde driving the ball forward, getting involved in the right wing, making runs in the right half space, getting involved in the attack. Today, it was a little bit more conservative from him by design, because Carlo, you know, lost his number one and number two best defensive midfielders. He did say in the pregame press conference that Fede can play as DM, which I don't. It's not that I disagree. It's that we've almost never have seen it. And the couple times we have seen it, it hasn't been great with him there. And so I don't know if I necessarily agree or disagree with that statement. But I do think he can play DM if it's a double pivot. So if you're putting him in a double pivot, I think it works. It made sense. So he was a little bit more conservative in his role today. And you saw it. I mean, I think it was the third goal, right? Let me see. Pretty sure it was the third goal. Where's my notes tab? There it is. The second goal, sorry. Fede wins the ball, like, really well, deep in our half. And that's eventually what leads to Rodrigo's second goal. I thought he did a lot of good defensive work deep. So, like, the rights, and it's funny because the right side won't get many plaudits in this game because it was virtually non-existent offensively, because Fede was playing deeper. Carvajal was actually playing as a right winger. Our wingers today were Rodrigo on the left, Carvajal on the right. That's how it was designed, to provide some kind of symmetry. And the fact that we knew, Carlo knew, we were going into this game without any presence on the right wing. So it was going to be very left heavy. Even Joselu was mostly on the left side. But I thought our right side was underrated in that sense. I thought Carvajal fought really well. Fede did a lot of good defensive work. And our left side was obviously very, very efficient, with Jude roaming there a lot. Rodrigo cooked. And Joselu had some interesting moments, we'll put it that way, which we'll get into. But I liked it too. I liked the double pivot.
Yeah, and I think one other thing on Fede Valverde, and another kind of tip of the hat to Carlo Ancelotti, is this is something we've seen all season where you mentioned Carvajal goes as a right winger. Well, Fede basically sits in that deeper right back, almost like a right back position. He's there for the, it makes the best of his abilities, because one, he's there for the counter press. He's fast enough to track anything down that comes out in transition. And then three, if he does pick up the ball, he usually has plenty of space and plenty of field in front of him. It's not like his back is to goal or anything, where he can do his unbelievable line breaking dribbling and ball carrying. And so I think I really, really have liked that kind of new tactical wrinkle that Carlo introduced this season. And we see it basically every game now. And I think it's gotten not only the best out of Fede, but gotten the best out of Carvajal. And so I think that's another thing, like, kudos to Ancelotti.
Yeah, Carvajal himself, like, was in a bunch of great counter-pressing positions, and he did really well to just hound Cadiz, make sure they don't break, and actually prevented a lot of Cadiz's attacks that way, and also worked hard to track as well. So, you know, Carvajal's been great this season. It continues today. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Modric, by the way, who I thought had a good game. I really like Modric's performance today. Has a an overload on his ischium. Is that how you say it? That's the word Carlo Ancelotti used in the press conference, and it's the hip bone. So just like we needed like another something. So maybe towards the end of the podcast, we can talk about like what rotations look like in the Napoli game, if there's any players left to play in that game.
Yeah.
Rodrigo, man. I mean, I don't think there's been anyone in the world, apart from Ancelotti and Rodrigo themselves, that have championed the Rodrigo cause as much as you have, even during his slump. Was this like a proud moment for you?
Yeah, it definitely was. In the last few games, look at the last three games. He has 9 goal contributions. I think it's 5 goals, 4 assists in the last 3 games. I appreciate you saying that, because it is something like I've been kind of banging on the drum about. Is like, it will come, it will come, it will come. Like, everything is there. He's doing all the things right. It's just there's a little. He was shy on confidence in front of goal. It just wasn't going his way. And we talked about it. I remember we talked about it on the podcast, saying like, hey, he just needs one game where he scores a couple or 2 or 3, and then it'll start to roll. And that's exactly what's happened. So long may that continue. Long may that hopefully kind of reset his season for the rest of the season. I think if he can get up to 10 goals by end of December, like, that's right where we want him to be. And I think he can kick on in the second half of the season. So, he got to play in a more traditional left winger role today. And I mean, everything he did, he was gliding past opponents left and right, his quick little touches, his close control. I'm actually doing the player ratings now, and the picture, I wanted to select a picture of Rodrigo, and the one I found of him, it's so interesting because like, he's dribbling, he's about to take on Javier Hernandez, and his head is like, he's looking up. Like, he's not looking at the ball at all. Like, I think that's kind of an underrated factor to how good he is with the ball at his feet. Like, he's scanning and looking up the whole time, and yet can still be so smooth on the ball. And so I think he was just, man, what a performance. Really, really happy for him. And hopefully this long may it continue.
Well, sometimes we forget that he is literally one of the best dribblers in the world. Like, I would put him in the top 5. The only reason he didn't hit Vinicius numbers in terms of overall successful take-ons is because he played slightly less than him last season. But if you look at a per 90, he is pretty much toe-to-toe with anyone in the world when it comes to dribbling. And I think there's just some kind of wizardry with him in very tight spaces that he just knows. Like, it's not luck. Like, when he gets past, like, 3 players who are hounding him, when he breaks lines, carries the ball through traffic, he has to go through multiple players, there's a skill to it. He knows where to drop his shoulder. He knows where to cut, you know, shimmy one way, go the other, step over is everything. Like, you can, if you want, call it lucky that the ball ended up at his feet after that nutmeg. But I mean, that's just a player in his element. There's a slow-mo replay that Managing, which I posted on Twitter, of the goal, the first goal. And you can tell, like, it's so, like, he knows the nutmeg is there. He just uses the outside of his boot, his right foot, to just poke it through the defender's legs, and then comes out the other side with it. And of course, the goal is insane. The finish is insane. And then the second goal, more of the same. Great dribbling. The third goal, he didn't score it, but, I mean, it was his dribbling again to set up Jude Bellingham. So, I mean, 10 out of 10 from Rodrigo tonight. Fantastic. Jude also. The thing with Jude, Matt, you think, I feel like I haven't spoken to you in a long time now that I think about all the things I've said in the podcast, and like I said this, and like I said this before the game, and you weren't there. Thought, like, I was curious to know, and again, just to preface it, I'm really thankful this schedule, this is the part of the schedule we lost half our team. God willing, this, you know, knock on wood, once this part of the schedule is over, we can regain most of our players and be relatively injury-free, ideally injury-free for the rest of the season. But, like, just the tug of war of where Bellingham plays, because you all of a sudden you lose the defensive tracking of Camavinga and Tchouaméni. You lose the attacking impetus of Vinicius. And we weren't sure what Rodrigo's state was going to be like because of his knee. And I saw it today. I felt like, because you need Jude to play defense, you need him to attack. And there were sequences in this game where he's dropping deep to help Mendy escape pressure, like deep in our own half. And seconds later, he has the ball in the box. And like you can see like where he's needed, and it's basically everywhere. And I just like, obviously, like I think if you put that kind of burden on anyone, it's probably Jude who can handle it. And that's, again, it's not to say that like I am worried kind of on the toll it will take over the course of the season, I suppose. But it's this, the reason I'm saying this is more not about that, but more just that it makes what he's doing even more impressive. Like the finish today, fantastic. All of his defensive work today, fantastic. His play in the build-up phase. You even look at Rodrigo's first goal. It's brilliant individual play from Rodrigo, because initially you're like, oh, Jude Bellingham got an assist for that. You know, well, wow, great assist. I mean, Rodrigo did everything. But actually, like Bellingham's ball progression in that play was amazing. Just to get us the ball in the box. So I just wanted to get your two cents on that. And like, where is he needed the most? I guess you just keep him here, but what were your thoughts?
I completely agree with you. I think even on the ESPN feed that I was listening to with Derek Ray, there was that one moment where he tracks all the way back on the left, down the left channel to make a crunching slide tackle, which was clean, got 100% of the ball. And they're like, he's the most expensive player on this field. He doesn't have to do that, but that's what he does.
Yeah.
And he makes those challenges. He puts in the effort. He puts in the work. Like you said, and we've talked about it at the beginning of the season, is this sustainable over the course of a full season? Just the amount of work he puts into a single game. That's where Carlo has to just make sure that he gives him the adequate amount of rest. But it's incredible. And I even, I think I saw a thing where Harry Kane was kind of building. They asked him to build his perfect striker.
Yeah, he put Jude for work ethic.
Yeah. And so, and it just like, I think that's a huge testament to Jude Bellingham and just what he brings to a game and the amount of sprints and just effort and energy he provides. And he's everywhere and he does a little bit of everything. And even in that tackle, I was like, yeah, that's the English mentality in him. That's like that. He's got that little bit of something extra there where he wants to get stuck in. And then he still has that Zidane-esque flair and just kind of gracefulness to his game. And so, I thought he was superb. I loved him in the number 10 role. I think that was the best role for him. And I'm glad, even despite all the injuries, we're still playing him there. And that he got on the score sheet today, because like, that was really his only big chance, right? I can't think of another major opportunity.
One or two shots that I think maybe got blocked, but nothing. I'll check. I'll look it up, though. But yeah, I think that was it. I mean, he took a clean. Like, are you like oddly desensitized to his goals now?
Yeah, we are starting. I feel like we are starting to. But every time he scores, I'm really happy just because I want him to keep this going. Like, I just love it. I love the storyline. I think it's insane. And the longer it can go, just the happier I am.
He had that. So this showed up as a massive 0.6 on the XG chart. But that 17th minute when Modric crosses with his left foot into the box and Bellingham making the run to get on the end of it. Remember that?
Vaguely.
He didn't really connect with it. It kind of just like went off his foot. That was a really great chance, but he didn't connect with it. What's that?
On the XG? They counted that on the XG?
0.6. It's the biggest chance of the game, actually.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I thought it was a really great pass from Motors. That's why I remember it so clearly. And it was a great off-ball run from Bellingham. I really liked Modric. You kind of mentioned at the top of the show the role mobility of Modric and Bellingham was interesting because they both kind of floated in and around the 10. It's like a double 10 where like they kind of just recognize and play off of each other. If I'm advanced, the other one might drop deeper to cover. It's pretty interesting, like, how that functions. I mean, obviously, it's probably not something we'll see much of, although we'll probably see it quite a bit over the next 2 months, to be honest with you, because of the injuries. But, you know, maybe not something we'll see in the second half of the season because Tchouaméni and Camavinga just don't play that way. But I thought that was interesting. All right, where do you want to go next?
Yeah, I mean, just on Modric quickly, I think he, I thought first half there was some moments where he had a little bit heavy passes, a little bit heavy touches, and he was kind of blaming his teammates. But second half, I thought he turned it on, especially before he got injured, and looked really good. Like you said, like for a midfield that really hasn't played together this season, in kind of a new system, it really meshed well. And I thought the connection was well, the movement, the interchange of positions, like all that, as you mentioned, was nice to see.
Some Lunin thoughts. The only thing I think he kind of struggled with today was his passing, which he's been generally pretty good at. I mean, there was Cadiz were pressing on goal kicks. I thought Lunin did well, apart from a turning point kind of was in this 22nd minute. He gets yelled at by Rudiger for not switching the ball. And instead of switching it the other way to an open man, he puts Rudiger under pressure. And Rudiger has to kick it out of bounds. And then he yells at him, and Modric is telling him, hey, you should have switched it over there. And he's saying, my bad, my bad. And then after that, he like actually overthought some of his passes. Like there was one time when Rudiger was wide open and he just didn't pass to him because he was like thinking like, oh, maybe I'll get yelled at again. I don't know. But other than that, I shouldn't have led with that, but it's more like I wanted to just get that out of the way because I actually like his ball distribution in general. That save he made in the 39th minute was unreal. And I'm just kind of surprised why the commentators didn't make a big deal out of it. I was like, are you guys, this is might be the save of the season, or at least like in the highlight reel at the end of the season of one of the best saves of the season. I thought it was just like the underreaction to it annoyed me. I thought it was an incredible save. But I don't know if you saw this. The talking point is actually this. Carlo said after the game, very frankly and emphatically, like no room for interpretation. When Kepa's back, he's going to start. So I just wanted to see where you stand on that. Like when Kepa comes back, and I think he's going to be back for the Granada game, he's just going to walk back into the starting lineup. Do you... It's kind of a tricky one because I think Lunin has earned himself more than just being like the emergency guy. So, I don't know. I'm curious to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah. If anything, I don't think there's much between Kepa and Lunin. I'd like to see a longer sample size with Lunin before I have like my verdicts, but these past few games, he's looked great. And I remember when we tracked him for the loan tracker on the games he did actually play. And I specifically remember one of the interviews with the Leganés goalkeeper coach where he said Lunin is a Champions League level goalkeeper. He's got Champions League level quality. And
Leganés the team that didn't play him?
Yeah, and they didn't play him, but the goalkeeper coach recognized that they did an interview with him, and he recognized just like how talented he was at that young age, and so yeah, I don't know. I'm surprised that Carlo was so matter of fact on it, but I wonder. I don't know. I kind of wonder. Did you remember that little like tussle that Lunin had with goalkeeper coach in preseason?
No,
with Luis Lopez, there was like some video that came out where Lunin like was arguing with Luis Lopez, the Real Madrid goalkeeper coach, and I don't know. I wonder if there's like maybe something with an attitude thing. I don't want to characterize him or kind of do anything like that. But I don't know. It just seems weird that Ancelotti is so matter of fact about it.
Interesting. I don't know. I just feel like I felt comfortable with Lunin so far.
Yeah.
In these games that and Kepa, I'm just kind of like Kepa can have some incredible reflexes and make some incredible saves, but there's part of me that sometimes just feels a little bit uneasy, you know, with some of his distribution. Maybe if he's trying to claim a cross, I'm like, oh man.
Yeah.
You know. Just wanted to point that out. Would you say this is kind of like a weird game in the sense that it was 3-0, moments of brilliance that were really fun to watch, but then kind of had a lot of boring spurts without much to talk about?
Well, I was actually pretty surprised at how open the game was at times. And like Tadis usually just kind of set up shop against us, and it's so difficult to break down. But there were plenty of transition moments, plenty of times where the game got a little bit stretched.
Yeah.
Even with their back five, I mean, I think we were able to create opportunities and find a way. And it never, I don't know about for you, but it never felt like this game, even when it was still 0-0 or 1-0, like it never felt like this game was in doubt for us. We felt in control. Cadiz really only created danger through set pieces or kind of a cross for the late header that we talked about with no one tracking. But other than that, like we didn't have much. I thought, I find it interesting how I forgot that Cadiz has Victor Chust and Javi Hernandez, both former Real Madrid center backs, Castilla center backs, who both made their debuts with the first team. Obviously, Nacho's brother, Alex Fernandez, is the captain, former Madrid guy as well.
A couple of villains, too. Juan Cala, Ivan Alejo.
Alejo, yeah, when he came on. They're an interesting team. I thought Ruben Alcaraz actually had a decent game. He somehow got away with just every time Carvajal touched him, it was apparently a foul, which Carvajal cracks me up when he like tries to restrain himself and like beats the ground and like is so pissed off when he gets a foul called against him. I can kind of sympathize with him there, but it's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, other than, like, they really didn't test us. Robert Navarro, who's the kid from Real Sociedad, who's kind of tipped for big things, I didn't think he did much. Roger Marti, who's been a La Liga veteran for so long, usually played for Levante. I thought he was the only one that maybe caused a little bit of trouble, but Nacho really handled him well. And Nacho, once again, stepping in to fill a void in the defense, and like nothing ever happened. And I think Rudiger, you mentioned it earlier, but Rudiger's just, again, quietly been so, so consistent this year. I was worried last year after the first half of the season that, man, this guy is just not going to fit Real Madrid. Like he looks like he is just a back three, Tuchel type player. Tuchel got the best out of him. Like it's not going to be the same at Real Madrid, but he's really not only adapted to a back four, but he predominantly plays on the right-hand side where he used to play on the left-hand side.
Yeah. The exact place that everyone was skeptical about. Like, what if we have to play 4-4-2 when he has to play on the right? Yeah, he's been great. Yeah,
he's been great. And I think we've been pleasantly surprised by Rudiger.
Yeah, Rudiger was great. I think, and your point about the open game, I think the early goal we scored helped a little bit with making sure Cadiz don't go in this really disgusting low block. So that was great for at least entertainment value and also our chances of winning. And just to harp on again, I'm really thankful for this schedule being what it is for the next stretch. Even that Napoli game is not important, even though it's a big team visiting the Bernabeu. When you see some of the sequences that Cadiz gave us trouble in, they're all the same. And they involve either set pieces, which we'll struggle with against any team. They'll probably, like, I think you and I, if it was like 2 vs. 11 versus Real Madrid, and one of us was hitting set pieces, I think the other one would get a free header. I think I would like, I think I'm very confident of our chances in that situation. So there was that. And then there was just the tracking runners, which of course, like, not to excuse it, but I kind of expected that to be the case without Tchouaméni and Camavinga, and I expected to be the case for the next 2 months. So better teams than Cadiz would have given us more problems, obviously. But again, this schedule being what it is we have to be at least thankful for that. The subs. Got a nice cameo from Gonzalo Garcia. Nico Paz also getting in on the action. Ceballos returns. Do you have anything on the subs?
Really happy to see some of the kids get a chance. Obviously game was over and they didn't have too many touches when they came on. But Dani Ceballos in particular, I've always had a soft spot for Ceballos. I thought he played honestly tremendously well, since returning from Arsenal. both that second half of the year after his injury when Carlo first that his first season back, and then last year as well. Just he turned it on last year, especially anytime he was given the chance. Think of that Copa del Rey game where he just completely turned the tide against Villarreal. I'm happy to see him back. Hopefully he can stay fit and start entering this midfield rotation. We especially need him now with Modric going down. So it's been a good opportunity for him. I think this is that moment. Like, this is the moment in the season where people have to step up, and it's, you've used the phrase before, Keon, I think it comes from basketball, is like next man up. And that's kind of where we're at right now. And I think it's going to be an opportunity where guys can take advantage of a new role. I think Ceballos is going to be one of those who's really going to benefit. And it's a shame Arda Güler is out at this time, because I think it would have been a great opportunity.
I forgot to list him when I made my list of injuries.
Yeah, I think it would have been a great opportunity for him at this time to like really get some substantial minutes under his belt and like carve out a role given all the injuries, but it wasn't meant to be. And maybe it'll be for guys like Nico Paz and Gonzalo, and we'll see how many minutes they actually get over the course of this stretch. But definitely happy to see all those guys kind of get on the field.
Yeah, I was looking at that at halftime. I was looking at the list of subs, and I was thinking like, okay, I feel pretty good about this. I saw Ceballos as an obvious sub, probably Lucas Vazquez too. I was like, I wonder if we'll get a Gonzalo Garcia appearance. And I'm really happy we did. I mean, there wasn't much else to choose from, so that worked in his favor. But I'm always like just kind of happy when these games where we have a big lead and we get to take off our best players like Rodrigo and Bellingham, etc. And then we get to introduce the kids. I always have, I think it's a happy Sunday for me when that happens. And
yeah,
I mean, the end of the game was quite chaotic. It was basically, I mean, Fran Garcia came in. There was like six Real Madrid players in the offensive end.
I lost track of who came in.
Vazquez, Garcia, Ceballos, Fran Garcia. These guys are all trying to get on the score sheet. No one's defending. So it's like six Real Madrid players in Cadiz's third, losing the ball. And then Cadiz have a counterattack. Lunin did make another nice save late.
Yeah, he did.
From one of those Cadiz transition attacks. But at that point, the game was so over. I mean, Cadiz had left the stadium, all the fans as well. So, yeah.
So, let's zoom out for a second and just kind of put yourself back in your shoes at the start of the season where we don't sign a number nine. It's the end of the transfer window. We have limited, most people would say we're not going to score many goals. We have limited resources. Like, Carlo Ancelotti is going to have to be a miracle worker. Right now we're top of La Liga. We've scored the most goals in La Liga. We had the best defense in La Liga. We had the Pichichi. We're top of the group in the UCL, and we've already qualified for the round of 16. What's that? What would you tell yourself at the preseason? You having seen all this,
Something that I think would have had to have been informed. We would have to also have been informed that half the team is missing. On top of that,
yeah,
like Vinicius is okay, like. It's Vinicius.
Yeah, Vinicius and Rodrigo didn't get going and they're injured half the time.
Yeah. If I didn't know about the injuries and you had told me we would be in this position, I would have assumed that like Vinny has 10, Rodrigo has 10, Jude has 10 at this point. Like everyone's chipping in. I would not have expected that Jude has, what is it, 14 now?
14.
And that Vinny barely can play because of his health, and Rodrigo was in a huge slump. I would not have expected that. So I would say the miracle job has been done by Carlo up until now.
So
I think it's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big question, and this is something I posed to Ruben like back in the summer, is like,
and by the way, people are asking, where's the Big Picture podcast?
we got to get that back going.
Yeah.
This is something I posed to him in the summer and said, like, I'm genuinely curious. And he kind of felt the same way. Genuinely curious as to what a third season with Carlo Ancelotti looks like, because we've never had it. We always had the two, and we've never, and they were, the both seasons were kind of similar to each other, both tenures. So yeah. What does a third Carlo Ancelotti season look like? And obviously, he's had to deal with some handicaps and some bogeys coming his way, but so far, so good. And honestly, if you ask me, like, let's say Xabi Alonso doesn't want to leave Leverkusen just yet, because he is a guy that has put kind of very specific plans in place in terms of his coaching steps. And so I could see it being very realistic that he's not quite ready. Maybe he wants to continue to build on what he's done at Bayern Leverkusen, or maybe take another step before Real Madrid, whatever it is. But if that's the case, and even, I mean, I don't think Carlo is the second or third best manager in our entire history. I'm giving him that renewal as soon as possible, if that's the case.
I think even if Xabi Alonso wants to come, he may not be able to.
Yeah, I think it may be warranted for Carlo. Like, as much as some people may think that's short term, I think the Xabi Alonso train will come back.
Okay, so I don't want to lose out on Xabi Alonso, but I have been saying this all season. Like, why are you guys pretending that Carlo has already taken the Brazil job when he hasn't? Yeah. Like, it's very realistic. Unless this season is a complete disaster by the end of it, like we lose La Liga, like it's like a, we just collapse, fall apart. Round of 16, come, like we get knocked out. Round of 16, we don't know who we're playing yet.
Yeah.
Unless that happens, like he has a pretty long leash.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at like another, like, you know, let's say a La Liga triumph and a Champions League semifinal elimination or a quarterfinal elimination, I think he stays.
Yeah, and I think given everything, especially the context of this season, it's warranted. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, that's one to watch, but I just think sometimes it goes to your point. Like, I think sometimes it's just assumed that Carlo's not staying, and that he doesn't necessarily get credit for everything he's done. And we've been equally as critical of Carlo in the past, especially in that January, February timeframe when we typically see the dip. And like, remember, I think it was last year, or maybe the year prior, when the team just looked atrocious in the Spanish Super Cup.
There's been plenty. Even this season,
the 4-0 Clasico.
Yeah, I mean, even this season, the decision to bench Tchouaméni against Atletico, and then not starting Camavinga in Clasico, and then obviously
he came in and just completely changed the games too.
Yeah, it's not perfect.
But no coach is ever going to be perfect. Like, if I've learned anything over my time watching this club and this team, is like, no matter how much you like a certain coach, whether it be Zidane, Carlo Ancelotti, whoever it is, Jose Mourinho, they're all going to do things that you don't agree with. Like, you're always going to find yourself in those types of situations, and it may go on for a couple months. It may go on, maybe like a reoccurring pattern that you really disagree with. But if you zoom out and look at the overall picture, are you happy with this manager? I think is the question you got to ask yourself, because you're always going to nitpick certain things with any manager, Xabi Alonso, whoever it is. You're always going to nitpick things.
The guy who brought us La Decima and then brought us arguably the most epic Champions League title we've ever had. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, that's the zoomed out version of this. All right. So we're at like 45 minutes or so here. Do you have anything else?
The only things coming through my mind are Rodrigo's goals.
I have something.
Yeah.
What is going through Jose Lu's head on leaving that? I mean, we all know what was going through his head. He thought he was offside, so he left it.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever seen someone not take the chance, at least. Like, you got to at least try and then let VAR decide.
I think he thought Rodrigo was going to try and dribble the goalkeeper, but it was clear enough that, like, Rodrigo was passing that and not taking a big touch.
It was very clear, yeah.
Yeah, it was clear.
And Jose Lu was onside, right? Like, the replay showed him onside.
I don't know. I didn't look back at it.
Pretty sure he was.
But yeah, that was, I mean, Rodrigo could have had another assist or another goal there. And Jose Lu could have gotten on the score sheet. Jose, like, he has some nice link up, especially you can tell him and Bellingham have a good connection. And obviously Simeone's called that out before, and they call each other Crouchy and Defoe. I don't know if you knew that. They call each other Crouchy and Defoe. And so they have a good connection. I still think, obviously, we know what Joselu is. There's some limitations to his game, and if I had the option to have someone else in there, I probably would. But I think tonight he was fine. Like, he definitely wasn't one of the standouts, but he did enough to kind of enough link up play, enough getting in the box that he wasn't like a detriment to the team or anything.
Yeah. I mean, we had the luxury of a brain fart like that in this game.
Yeah. And that would have been the biggest XG opportunity if he actually touched it.
Yeah, obviously no shot was even registered. I mean, yeah. that's the one I would like. Sometimes I think XG should revise it so that those chances do show up on the XG chart. Yeah. But I don't know
how would you measure it though?
I don't know, like goal scoring position. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like it only counts shots. I mean, you have other ways kind of like to talk about field tilt, like, but that's more of a general thing and not like a specific chance to measure. So
yeah,
I don't know, that's the one thing about XG I think should be somehow revised.
I agree.
okay. Well,
one other, I think, individual we didn't talk about is Ferland Mendy. What'd you make of his performance?
It was okay. I mean,
yeah, kind of the same as it's been.
Nothing offensively, defensively, he was okay. I mean, he
got megged that one.
That he was 32nd minute, he gets megged, and then takes the yellow card. I feel like the 2021 version of Mendy wins that duel.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like the 2021 version of Mendy like never ever got beat. Like it was like 100% he's winning the ball every time. This one it was like he's kind of unsure. It was a defensive stance, looks a step a little bit. It just wasn't bad. It just wasn't, you know, it was okay.
Yeah,
I thought I wrote about the Valencia. I wrote a few observations on Brahim, Camavinga, Vinicius, Rudiger, and Mendy. It's on the website. People can go read it. Also on the website right now. There's a couple things, big pieces that, and also Sid did a really great long form tactical analytical visual article as well. So you guys should go read that. But what I wrote about Mendy was like that Valencia game was a little bit encouraging. It was better, but it was still like it wasn't as good as I thought, because I went back and I rewatched and there were a couple of weird Mendy moments in that one too. Like even though it was a step in the right direction for me, it still wasn't like the Mendy of 2 years ago. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I just wanted to say something really quick, because a lot of people ask, like, how do we meet the managing Madrid people if we're visiting Madrid and going to the games? If you guys are interested, a couple hours before the Napoli game, I'll be interviewing fans outside the stadium. So, if you're just walking around, you're going to the game, you can catch me that way. Just don't be shy, approach and introduce yourself. That's one way to do it on this coming week specifically. And I'm going to do some shout outs as well, Matt. Did you have anything before I do that? Like anything about like plugs or like you, any real deal? Not real deal. Big picture announcements. What's going on with Ruben these days?
I don't know. We gotta catch up. I've been just, as you know, kind of all in on the family stuff right now. Yeah. And then
Thanksgiving, you got a baby.
Yeah. So I'll have to catch up with him. I'm not sure. We haven't spoken in a while.
All right. If you guys like these podcasts, and if you're here 45 minutes or so after the podcast started, it means you do. Even if you don't want to admit it, like deep down in your heart, even if you hate us, you're like, if you're still here, you kind of like it. Okay. That's safe to say. So if you kind of like it and you want access to more, including a big Real Madrid family you can be a part of, you can get access to a ton of bonus shows we do, at least two or three per week over on patreon.com/managingmadrid for our members. Please join the family. We'd love to have you. And one fun thing is like you can also join the Zoom calls and have conversations with us virtually face-to-face. So we look forward to seeing you on the inside. So shout out to all of our patrons over on patreon.com/managingmadrid. Shout out to these patrons specifically who pledge $10 per month or more. And if you pledge $10 per month, you get a specific shout out on the podcast, in addition to getting guaranteed responses to your questions and access to everything. So shout out to these $10 plus patrons: Brandon Alvarez, Willie Reed, Will Sousa, Wasim Issam Haddad, Wamik Jamal, Tobias Royal Botcher, Tahmid Kalam, Sushank Damala, Sujai Wani, Somanchu Singh, Sheikh Hatiri, Sergio Arispe, Santos Solorzano, Samuli Justin, Samar Z, Sai Mohan, Sasi Kumar, Rishi D, Phoenix, Peter Powell, Paulo Fierro, Patrick Odiafati, Oscar Barrera, Nicholas Moeller, Nick Ribeiro, Nelson Masariego, Indaba Labangana, Naveen Babu, Ramesh Babu. Man, I feel like I'm getting better at these name pronunciations. I'm a little proud of myself. Where are we at? Daniel Smith, Fabian Moreno, Primo, Ramtin Makhrur, Varun, Bella Chow, Adam Dorsey, Adarza Lukovic, Azaz Hussein, Alex Thyberg, Alexandria McCaskill, Ananya Kumar, Andres Silvestre, Anthony Tharp, Armando L., Armand Gashi, Armash, Arnab Mukherjee, Brandon Stevens, Brandon Powers, Carlos Fuentes, Christian Acosta, Christian Toft, Connor McMorrow, Daniel Williams, Deadpool Lover, Eloy Enriquez, S.A. Davisito, Frederick Sundros, Frederick Antakiro, Gary Cohut, Graham Gerard, Howard Moore, Ian Marley, Jacob P., Jason Fitz, John Fernandez, Jose Cruz, Jose Osorio, Kevin Rivera, Khalfan Alkabi, Kunal Tilakar, Leon Stavranakis, Logan Stahl, Magnus Lex, Martin Ridman, Matthew Atkins, Marin Myrtle, Michael Zinberg, and MJ Diego. Legends, thank you so much. Matt, happy belated Thanksgiving. Hope you and your family are well. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll catch you Monday. Monday, Lucas and I will be doing El Día Después. Thanks, Matt.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Sports Social Podcast Network.